Welcome back. This is Eugene Meyer, president of the Federalist Society, and we are pleased now to have a short address from Ajit Pai, who is the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission. He is was first appointed to the commission in 2012 and then became chairman in 2017, has been a very active and involved commissioner, and we look forward to hearing from him. Ajit?
Thank you so much, Gene. And I would add, a longstanding member of the Federalist Society in good standing. And speaking of which, I want to thank the Federalist Society for inviting me to participate in this event. To quote a phrase, an autonomous zone for free speech and open inquiry. It's a shame that we couldn't meet in person, I have to say. But if it's any consolation, you're paying a lot less for online learning, the folks on the call, than the incoming class of Harvard Law School students. So there is that. Although I suppose getting together virtually makes it easier for you to conceal the identities of the shadowy cabal that is apparently taking over our nation's judiciary, if you listen to some. One thing I've learned from doing something like 3 months now of webinars is that telling jokes can be awkward when all of the participants are on mute. And so I'm going to dispense with the bureaucratic humor, as it were, and just get straight to the topic at hand. The event's organizers have pulled together an all-star panel, six panels of scholars and experts to discuss the legal and policy questions that have been raised by the coronavirus pandemic. And I don't pretend that I can match the intellectual firepower of these scholars, from Anoop Milani to Ian Ayers and beyond, but I do bring a unique perspective as to this discussion, and that's because as the head of the Federal Communications Commission, I've had a chance to manage a federal agency during what has been and hopefully will be a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic. And that means I've had to confront and answer some of the questions that the United States government has had to face on the fly. And so I thought I'd spend my time this morning talking about how the FCC has responded to the COVID-19 pandemic and some of the lessons that we've learned over the course of the past several months. At the commission, we began updating our pandemic plan and taking appropriate precautions early this year, well before the middle of March, as COVID-19 started spreading around the world and, of course, came to the United States. And unlike most of America, the situation, or I should say like most of America, the situation became very salient to the commission on March 11th. And that was the day the World Health Organization officially declared the coronavirus pandemic to be a global pandemic. That was also the day the president delivered an Oval Office address on the crisis. And from a more cultural perspective, if you will, that was also the day that we learned that Tom Hanks had the coronavirus and that the NBA was shutting down for the rest of the season because a Utah Jazz player had been infected. My most immediate concern was, of course, with the health and safety of the FCC's staff. And that is why the very next morning, I directed all FCC staff who could telework to begin doing so, to work from home. A full week before California became the first state in the nation to issue a stay-at-home order. We were also thinking about what we could do to help the American people generally. And with limited time to address a fast-moving situation, we needed to make quick judgments about the most important national objectives, objectives where the FCC could make a positive difference. Now, looking at the landscape in early March, a few things quickly became clear. The first was that social distancing was going to force huge segments of our economy and our society, much of our daily lives altogether, to move online, which made it much more important than ever that Americans have internet access. And second, stay-at-home orders would create massive temporary job losses and furloughs, putting millions of Americans at risk of missing bill payments and the like, and having their internet and telephone services shut off. And so as a result, we decided that our top immediate priority would be to make sure that as many American consumers as possible would have access to communication services during this difficult time, that no American would have their internet and voice services cut off because of disruptions caused by the coronavirus pandemic. And so then the question became, of course, how can we best achieve these goals? I noticed that the panel preceding my remarks was called government versus private decision making. And I think this tension accurately captures the challenge that the commission faced. We are pursuing goals, of course, on behalf of the public, but our broadband networks, by and large, are owned and operated by the private sector. And so in times of crisis, I can understand, of course, how some might be tempted to look for any lever they can find to force private companies to carry out the government's goal. This is, of course, an issue that has gone back for many, many years, as many people know from Youngstown Sheet and Tube back in the 50s. But the commission decided to put its trust in markets before mandates. And so in mid-March, we called on broadband and telephone service providers to take what we call our Keep Americans Connected pledge. And that pledge has three core commitments. First, that no consumer, either an individual consumer or a small business, will have service cut off because of an inability to pay a bill due to disruptions caused by the coronavirus pandemic. A second, no one would be charged late fees because of those same disruptions. And third, that Wi-Fi hotspots would be opened up to any consumer who might need them. Now, the response to this challenge that we issued was overwhelmingly positive. More than 750 broadband and telephone providers signed the pledge, including all of the nation's largest service providers. Many of you would know the names, but many, many of more smaller providers for whom those names are not a household name. Now, the initial pledge was set to expire after 60 days, which took us to about mid-May. But we also recognized that consumers' needs would persist well beyond that date. So we asked companies to extend their commitment to June 30th. And this time, even more companies, almost 800 of them, extended the pledge. And by working with industry, we were able to make much more progress much more quickly than we could have had we tried to pursue command and control type regulation. For example, within 48 hours of proposing the pledge, all of our nation's largest broadband providers, covering probably the majority of American consumers, had already signed on. Now, in addition to the pledge, we also urged providers to go above and beyond those three core commitments, to do whatever they could to help Americans stay connected and to expand connectivity. And they've done that. For example, they've upgraded internet speeds at no charge to consumers. They've expanded low-cost programs. They've offered free service to low-income families and to students. They've participated in partnerships with healthcare facilities and educational institutions to deliver connectivity. And they've done much, much more than that. And you can go to our website at fcc.gov/keepamericansconnected, where we list a great number of these above and beyond efforts. Now, some might wonder, why are these private companies doing these activities in the public interest? And I think the biggest answer to that is that at the end of the day, these decisions are ultimately made by people, by members of the public. And in trying times, most people want to do the right thing, not just for their company, but for their community and for their country. But it would also hazard a guess that the market creates powerful incentives for companies to do the right thing. If your company doesn't step up for you in times of trouble, or even worse, engages in bad behavior, of course, consumers will be much more likely to turn to a competitor in the weeks and the months and the years ahead. Now, at the FCC, we've been working to make it easier to do the right thing. The commission doesn't just want to encourage private industry to better serve the public. We want to free them to expand and to enhance their networks. And that's why we've moved aggressively over the past 3 years to cut the red tape that often prevents or delays innovative solutions to consumers' problems. And I'll give you just a case in point from the past couple of months. At the onset of the pandemic, one of the things that we heard from several wireless providers who came to the commission was that their wireless networks might get congested, and that they were seeking access to additional spectrum to meet this increased demand for mobile broadband. In a matter of days, and not weeks, not months, but days, we granted temporary authority to wireless carriers to use additional airwaves. And this made a huge difference at the end of the day for American consumers. In April, for example, average mobile broadband speeds in the United States went up, not down, even as there was a big increase in traffic due to many more Americans using these wireless networks. Moreover, an independent report suggested that additional spectrum helped one wireless provider double the speeds of its 4G service in certain high-density areas of the country, like New York. Now, similarly, we examined the FCC's programs to connect schools and rural healthcare providers, low-income households, and individuals who are deaf, hard of hearing, or have a speech disability. There's a lot of nitty-gritty in there, but the bottom line is that we relaxed rules and streamlined processes, extended deadlines and the like, to help extend service to more people during this pandemic. We've tried to be as nimble as the consumers we benefit and need us to be. But for all of our actions over the past 3 months to boost performance and the availability of broadband connectivity, there's a strong case that the key decisions, the one that helps us help the most over the past couple of months of the pandemic, were made long before anybody had ever heard of the coronavirus pandemic. with so many people teleworking, with millions going to school online, not to mention gaming and binge watching and the rest, our networks have been tested like never before. And it was not a given when this started that these networks would be up to the challenge. I'm pleased to report, however, that our networks in the United States are handling this surge in traffic, this big increase in demand, quite well, especially when compared to some networks in Europe and elsewhere. And one reason our networks have been able to withstand this increase in traffic is that we've seen a significant increase in infrastructure investment in the capital expenditures to build broadband infrastructure in recent years. For instance, in 2018 and then again in 2019, the United States set a record in terms of fiber deployment, millions more American consumers and small businesses connected with fiber than ever before. The number of wireless small cells that had been deployed has skyrocketed. And we've seen network investment hit levels that our nation hadn't seen for a decade. And these investments, these improvements, these increases in network performance didn't happen by chance. In December 2017, as you might have heard, the FCC overturned the previous administration's decision to heavily regulate the internet like a slow-moving utility under rules that were developed in the 1930s. And in the Restoring Internet Freedom Order, what we did was to replace those rules with a light-touch, market-based regulatory approach, one that protects the free and open internet, but also incentivizes infrastructure investment to capture consumer demand going forward. Our actions were based on a simple premise that the internet should be run by engineers and entrepreneurs and technologists, and not by lawyers and bureaucrats and politicians in Washington. Now, of course, that decision was not the only one that we've done to help encourage build out of broadband by removing regulatory barriers. When I became chairman, for instance, the FCC's regulations made it hard, if not impossible, for carriers to transition their networks from the copper of the lines of yesterday to the fiber of tomorrow. And so we've updated those rules to help companies focus on the future, which is fiber. Every dollar that's spent maintaining copper, by definition, cannot be spent on next generation fiber. The FCC also deregulated the $45 billion market for what are called business data services. These are high volume network services that are used by companies, nonprofits, and government institutions for things like ATM withdrawals and credit card transactions and just general internet access for employees. And reflecting the substantial increase in competition in this market, we relaxed some of the unnecessary command and control regulations that have been imposed, in some cases decades ago, to create greater incentives to invest in next generation networks, while still protecting small businesses and consumers in areas where that competition was lacking. Now, as a result of a lot of our deregulatory decisions over the past couple of years, we heard hysterical predictions that some of these policies would herald the end of the internet as we know it, that internet access would decrease, and that the internet would slow down, infamously, as was once said, that you would get the internet one word at a time. 2 years ago today, as a matter of fact, our new rules became effective in terms of restoring the light touch internet regulations of the past. And those predictions have proven as false today as they were foolish back then. After seeing broadband investment decline in 2015 and 2016, the first time that it ever happened outside of a recession during the internet era, American consumers benefited from increased infrastructure investment in wired and wireless networks. Average fixed broadband speeds in the United States have increased by more than 80% since we made that decision. The number of Americans without access to 25 megabit per second fixed broadband, which is the FCC's definition of broadband, declined by 30% from 2016 to 2018. And the number of Americans without access to 250 megabit per second broadband plummeted by 75%. Now, all of that infrastructure deployment over the past 3 years has been critical to helping keep our country connected during the pandemic. Indeed, while the European Commission, which imposed very strict internet regulations a few years ago, had to proactively call on video streaming services like YouTube and Netflix to throttle their traffic during the pandemic to reduce the stress on broadband networks, I'm pleased to say that didn't happen in the United States. Indeed, I didn't think for even a moment that we would need to take that extraordinary step. Not only is it unnecessary, given the strength of America's broadband networks, but the American people want and deserve to be able to stream Super Bowl 54, Tiger King, The Last Dance, and many other great programs in high definition. That is something that American consumers have not had to suffer, unlike their European counterparts. Now, another lesson I've learned from doing 3 months of webinars is that you can only keep an online audience engaged for so long. So I'm going to wrap things up before now, but I do want to express again my gratitude for the Federal Society for hosting this forum, for allowing me to participate, and more generally, your advocacy over the years on a whole bunch of different issues, including those within the bailiwick of the Federal Communications Commission. I hope that all of you stay safe during the pandemic, and I look forward to continuing to work with you in the exciting time to come. And thank you again, Gene, for your kind introduction.
Well, thank you very much, Ajit. Appreciate it a lot. We are going to now adjourn until 1:30. Our next panel is on federalism, and COVID-19 is at 1:30 Eastern time. Thanks so much.
Take care.